Welcome to Built Brave. Driven women sharing their stories to show others what is possible for them. Because we were all born brave. I'm your host, Lo Wentworth, and this is Built Brave. Are you ready? Hey, hey everyone, how are you? How's it going? We have almost completed the first month of 2020. Oh man alive, it's been an interesting one, getting back into the saddle. But it's alright, much needed. 2019 definitely still has some of its tricks up its beautiful little sleeve for me to experience, but more on that later. Again, lessons much needed to learn. And with that, I am so excited for this week's guest, Melissa. She is the founder of Ohm Brewers, and it was just a great conversation that we had, and full of different tools and tactics for someone who is about to take a leap of faith on themselves, doing their own thing, whether it is, you know, starting their own business or going to a different corporate career or going back to school, whatever it may be. Like, we talk about a fear list. When she brought that up in this interview, I'm like, what? What is the fear list? And it is an amazing tool that everyone needs to know, because we all know our egos like to creep up and put us in that negative Nancy spiral of doom and gloom. And we talk about what it's like to just own your voice and speak it instead of being Mr. or Mrs. Shady Boots. Like, no one wants anyone to be Shady Boots, especially employers, especially when you're deciding to live a place of employment and do your own thing and what that looks like. And we discuss how she never envisioned Ohm Brewers to be what it is today. Like, this idea came one night from drinking at a bar. And I love those ideas. Just like Sasha, who created her own self-tanning business from drinking with some friends on a bar napkin. Like, really the best ideas sometimes come from that. Even though I don't drink anymore, I do know the value of silly ideas in company where you're like, huh, maybe I could. And it piques your curiosity. Like, you know, they're joking and something inside you is kind of like, oh, maybe I should go look at that. Yeah, those things. Go look at those things. And we just talk about so much stuff, especially figuring out your own way and what works best for you. Like, if you don't know what works best for you, you're never going to be able to show up fully and be in your power. And sometimes that shifts and changes as you grow, learn, develop, all of that. That's okay. We're human. If you didn't grow, learn, develop, become a different human at least 80 different times before you get 6 feet under, then maybe you're not living. I don't know. That's for you to decide. But anyways, I'm so excited to have Melissa on. I can't wait to hear what your guys' takeaways are from her and what aha moments came from this episode as well for you guys. And with that, let us begin. Hello, everyone. I'm so excited for this week's guest. And since I sound so amazing, I'm going to have her introduce herself. So, Melissa, take it away.
I'm Melissa. I'm the founder and owner of Ohm Brewers. And we are a pop-up yoga event in unexpected places. We do yoga in weird places, traditionally places that will serve alcohol, like breweries and bars and distilleries. We've done it in parks, we've brought in coffee, we've brought in dogs, we've done it in event spaces, we've done it in people's Airbnb living rooms. Like, we'll bring yoga anywhere, and then we always like to pair it with a drink and just give people a little instant reward after they've moved their body and done some breathing, and that's our model.
So how did you come up with Ohm Brewers?
So I was drinking by myself on New Year's Eve, as one does, at a local brewery here in Minneapolis. And I had just gotten a tattoo, and while I was sitting in the chair getting a tattoo, like three separate friends of mine got engaged, and I was just like, what am I doing with my life? Like, everyone is getting engaged and here I am getting a tattoo. And I went over to my favorite brewery and I was like, just keep it coming all night long. I have no plans, nothing going on. My life is meaningless. And I started chatting with one of the bartenders there. And then he was like, you know, why don't you, he knew that I taught yoga. We had done some classes before, the previous yoga studio that I had been a part of. And he was like, hey, whatever happened to those yoga classes that that studio was doing here that you were a part of? And I was like, oh, I'm not with that studio anymore. And he was like, well, have you ever thought about just doing it on your own? And I was like, oh, I don't know how I would like do that. I'm not like a business. I'm just like a solo person. So and the model at the time was like a yoga studio would partner with a brewery. Mm-hmm. And they would host like, you know, classes once a month and everything like that. And I was like, well, I wasn't teaching yoga at a studio at the time. And so I was like, I don't know who I would partner with to help like pull this off. And then he was like, well, we have someone that does kettlebells and she just does it herself. Like, it's like Erica's kettlebells. And so why can't you just do like Melissa's yoga? And I was like, maybe. And I work in marketing and branding and I know how to build websites and logos and everything like that. And so I was like, well, shit. I mean, I guess I could just make a website and sell tickets on my website. And so maybe I could. He's like, well, our new marketing director is sitting right over there and you should just go talk to her. And so I did. And she was like, yeah, you seem awesome. What date do you want? Okay, like a couple weeks from now. And then she said, you know, everyone was calling their classes really cheeky things like Namaste and IPA or like Suds and Savasana or things like that. And she was like, what about home brewing, like home brewing, mm-hmm. but home brewing. And I was like, I love that. Like, but let's be home brewers. Like, you brew the beer and we brew the ohms. And I just love that. And I bought the domain on my phone. I went home that night. I built the website. I called all my friends after the ball had dropped. And I was like, I started a company today. Like, oh my God. And that was that. And so we held the first class about a month later and it sold out. And I was like, well, if I can do this at this brewery, why can't I do it, you know, other places? And why can't I do it with other drinks? And so then a friend introduced me to a local restaurant owner and they had a private event space. And I said, what if we did yoga and om fashions? And so that was our second event. And then we did another brewery and it just kind of spiraled from there, coming up with what more cool things can we add to this to make it really fun and really special.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I had another guest on who her whole company started one drunken night yeah. as well.
Dude, the best ideas come from drinking, like every time. I know there's like a big movement right now. There's a lot of people that are abandoning alcohol. There's a lot of like alcohol-free breweries popping up. And I respect people that don't need alcohol for inspiration. But I don't know. I always, maybe it's just ego or something or whatever it is that holds me back, or fear, you know, whatever it may be. But yeah, I usually, after I can have a couple drinks and I just sit around and I feel comfortable with friends, usually the ideas start flowing. So,
yeah, no, I mean, respect everyone. Everyone gets to choose how they want to drink or not. But yep. I mean, when I was in law school, I knew I needed to have like a drink before I could even start writing a paper because it's just like so much information at once. And
right.
It's just needed to like calm down and like get rid of the ego. So how, like, when did you start teaching yoga? Like, how did you get into that? Because I know like the story, Om Brewer started like way beforehand, before that one drunken night, which is actually a really cool concept, but why did you start doing yoga?
So the first time I did yoga was, I was, I think I was 19 and I was in college and I was working for a hair salon. I had actually taken a year off of school. I was trying to get in-state tuition at UW-Madison at the University of Wisconsin. And so I had taken a year off of school so I could work full time. And that's how you pay in-state tuition in Wisconsin. I hope that law is still real. I hope that's still a thing. But so I was working full time at a hair salon, and with that comes just vanity. You know, everyone's like, we're always talking about hair and makeup and the latest workouts and this and that. And everyone was like, oh my God, have you heard of this new craze, hot yoga? And so this was what, 12 years ago now? And everyone was like, oh, you've got to try hot yoga. Like, you'll be so fit. That was the new workout. So we were always trying new workouts together. And so someone dragged me to a hot yoga class. And I hated it. I absolutely hated it. I like thought I was going to barf and it was miserable, but I bought this like 1 month for $40 and I was like adamant about getting the use out of it. Mm-hmm. I was just like, I'm not going to waste my money. So I went back and I went back again. And after a few times I started to get really, really hooked and I really, really enjoyed the way it made me feel. I was always a competitive athlete mm-hmm. in like high school and college even. And I tore my ACL, a couple months before I went to school. And so I couldn't kind of do some of the really intense competitive workouts that I had been used to doing. And I think hot yoga finally felt like a workout that I had been craving that I wasn't able to do since I had a bum knee. And so hot yoga gave me that outlet, for like an intense workout, but also gave me a challenge and it was just unlike anything I'd ever done before. And I loved it. So that's when I started doing yoga, got hooked. And I knew pretty early on from the moment that I started doing yoga that I wanted to be a teacher. I was really into Broadway as a kid. And like, I thought my dream as a kid was like being on Broadway and being in musicals and being kind of like center of attention. I'm a Leo, so that checks out. And so I think something about being a yoga teacher and being like the leader in the center of the room, like leading people, probably struck a chord in me that like young Melissa that wants to just like be on stage for everybody to see. So I think that was appealing to me as a yoga teacher, but also just wanting to provide spaces where people could really confront their feelings and confront how they were feeling. I always say my love of yoga is rooted in a lot of suffering. Like mm-hmm. I connect to yoga because it was the first time that I really confronted a lot of shitty things that I felt about myself and my past and my childhood. And it was the place I showed up because I felt like I could be a piece of shit there and that it would be okay. And I really wanted other people to have that experience of like, it's okay if you're not perfect and it's okay if you don't know, you know, what's going on, but just to express the emotions in such a physical way was really powerful for me. And I really started to develop and grow and I think really confront some tough emotions that I was navigating as I went to adulthood. And I wanted to give that same platform to other people, to connect with other people. And so being a teacher was that avenue for me.
Yeah. Similar journey with my own like yoga story as well. I mean, I'm a yoga teacher as well, but it's like the yoga space is just like that safe space where you could be like losing your shit, bawling your eyes out, and no one would be judging you.
Yeah.
But they just like hold it for you.
Yeah.
And that was what, like, that's what appealed to me, is because I just needed like a space where I could just be in all of my glory, whatever I was that day. And yeah,
all the messy glory.
No, and it's hilarious because I tell people sometimes, I'm like, yoga became my new sport. And everyone was like, no, yoga is not a sport. And I go, okay, hold on. Let's back up a second.
Yeah.
So when I played basketball all growing up until I had knee injury, so my junior year, I partially tore my ACL and re-tore my meniscus. So I knew then that like going to college was out and that like there was some sort of higher power telling me like, well, maybe I should shift my focus elsewhere.
Sure.
But when playing basketball, it's like, no, the game is 99% in your head and 1% what happens on the court.
Yeah.
And once you step onto that mat, like nothing matters on that mat. It's just you and the mat.
Yep.
You can't escape yourself. It's the same mental game that I was just like, nope, it is a sport. Please try it.
Yeah, no, completely, completely.
But it's all, yeah, it was just so much fun. And even like as a teacher, I thought it was hilarious when like these macho guys would come and be like, oh yeah, yoga. And then first downward dog, they're like huffing and puffing. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, I know that is always the thing, is like people being like, oh, yoga isn't that like challenging. But yeah, I think that as I've gotten older, I've moved away from like a less physical based practice, and it's become so much more than the physical postures for me, and like working out and getting like a deep sweat that's what initially attracted me to it. And I think that's a big reason why Om Brewers primarily teaches vinyasa still. We do like slow flow classes and restorative classes every now and then to like mix it up. But I do believe that the way to get people to approach yoga is through the physical nature of it. If you start walking around and be like, hey, let's chant and let's om and let's, you know, talk about our feelings, people are like, F no, I'm not going to pay $20 for that. Forget that. And so I think the way that you the way you make yoga more approachable and less intimidating is by giving it the workout spin that people are familiar with, you know, and like the type of yoga that I teach is very physically intensive. It is linking breath and movement. And it is a lot about getting people in their bodies and physically exerting them so that you can, you know, create more space and opportunities, and we can get into the gobbledygook of the yoga-ness of that. But I do believe in teaching at Om Brewers a very physical based yoga class. However, in my own practice, I've kind of moved away from the physicalness, and I've started to use practices at where I'm at right now as a student. I've really needed like the yin and the restorative and just moving really, really slow. And I am not the kind of yoga teacher that will tell you that yoga is a cure-all for everything. I do not believe that people should practice yoga 7 days a week. I think it's meant to complement. I think movement is really good movement. So I am not, that's a big reason why we're an event company. We're not a yoga studio. I'll never be a yoga studio. I don't want a yoga studio because I don't believe that people should be doing yoga 7 days a week, or at least not the type of yoga that I like to teach. Let's put it that way. You know, and my yoga comes in all sorts of different forms. Like if yoga is truly just linking, is being together breathing, which is my personal belief. Yoga is like religion and everyone has their own spin and they all want to be validated in some way about why their yoga is the right kind of yoga. You know, their religion is the right kind of religion. And my yoga is just being together breathing. So that means that I can go to a spin class and practice yoga. And that means that I can roll on the floor with my friends and it's a yoga class. And that means that I can, you know, cook and it's a yoga class. And like, I'm really into this idea of movement right now, that any kind of movement is better than no movement. And so some days that's 15 minutes on my mat, rolling around, like dancing. And other days it is a spin class. And other days it is like a HIIT class. I just joined the YWCA. I go swimming. I'm just such a big proponent of like movement and avoiding like repetition. One, because I think it leads to injury, and two, because I get bored really freaking easily. So, that's why we have events with so many different kinds of things. Cause I get bored. I don't want to do the same event over and over again. I want to have all these like, cool new events. Like, what can I create? What can I do?
Right. Always having like that different new challenge, creating a new spin on it.
Yep.
But yeah, no, I 100% agree. Like repetition brings boredom. And I think like with me, even like boredom is like, I'm not paying attention to my form and then like I get injured. Yeah. But let's back up to, how did you decide to make, how did you navigate the transition from doing, cause you were doing branding and marketing beforehand, into just Om Brewers full time?
Yeah, it was kind of all, nothing happened at once and it all happened at once, you know, that one of those things. So I worked in marketing and I worked for agencies here in Minneapolis, and I was doing video production for a big media house in town. And I was traveling all the time, and it was, on paper, it was an amazing job. Like I got to like go to the wilderness of Montana and ride ATVs and shoot videos. And everyone was like, damn, your job is really cool. But it wasn't me. It wasn't in line with my values and what I really cared about as a person. And you couldn't have paid me enough money to keep doing that job, because it just wasn't, it wasn't where my heart was. Om Brewers was already a thing. I never really intended it to be a moneymaker. I never really intended it to like be a career. It was just something that I genuinely did for fun. So I was working, but then as I continued to grow Om Brewers and as I continued to work at my job, I just felt like I had split personality disorder all the time. And I would walk into this environment for my, you know, 9-to-5 job, and it was like suffocating. It's like I had to put myself in a box, you know. I couldn't actually talk about what I wanted to or be the person that I wanted to be. And then when I would go to own brewers events or do stuff for that, that was me. That was like really who I wanted to be, you know. And I was like faking doctor's appointments to go meet with breweries like in the afternoon and stuff like that. And so there was just this big dichotomy between these two sides of my life. And I think I kind of reached a breaking point. And it was right before my 20, it was like the day after my 27th birthday, I think. And I was just like, I can't do this anymore. And I have no plans. I have no savings. Like I have, actually, that's not true. I knew that I had enough money in the bank that if I did not make a penny, I would be okay for 2 months. And I like looked at the bank account. I looked at all the credit card debt I already had, and I just said, it is not worth being this unhappy all the time. Like, I don't care what it's going to take. Like, I will babysit for friends. I will, you know, I will call mom and dad. I will beg. I will call my siblings. Like, it was just, I was willing to do anything. And I did this one activity. It's called, I want to say Tim Ferriss came up with this from the 4-hour work week. I want to say it's Tim Ferriss. It's called fear setting. And you write down a list of all of the things that you're afraid of in the left side column. And then on the right side column, you write down scenarios for what you would do if that fear came true. And so I did that, and I let my brain really go to like the worst possible thing that could happen. And like the first one was like, I won't be able to pay rent. Mm-hmm. And the answer to that was like, rent can go on a credit card. Like, that is not smart. No one should ever hire me to be their financial assistant. Do not hire me to run your finances. But it was a thing. And I was like, I could put rent on a credit card until I figured out, and that would buy me a month, you know, of time. And then like another one in there is like, I would be homeless. And I was like, my mom would let me live in her basement. She absolutely would. It would suck to move. It would suck to leave all of my friends behind. But like, I would have a place to sleep that would have food, you know? And so I went through this list of fear setting, and it became very obvious that all of these things I were afraid of, even if they came true, I would be okay. Like, I had a plan. I had an option if that didn't work out. And if these fears came true. And so I just said, you know, fuck it. And I took the leap, and I walked into my boss's office, and I just said, I'm not happy and I can't do this anymore. And I was so afraid, right? I was so afraid that they were going to be so disappointed in me. Like, we hired you to be this person. You're not who we thought you were. I'd only worked there like a year and a half, maybe. And I was so afraid that they were going to be livid with me and that they were going to be so disappointed and like question me. And so I had this whole speech prepared, you know, about all the reasons why this is why I can't work here anymore. And all I said was, I'm really unhappy. And they said, well, we don't want that. We don't want you to be unhappy. They're like, what would make you happy? And I was like, having an all remote job in some kind of a health and fitness realm. And they were like, okay, well then you should go do that. And you know, it was just kind of like, there was no arguing. There was no convincing. It was just like, no, like, we want you to be happy. We're not monsters. And so I quit. So I walked out, and then talk about weird twists of fate. They were so impressed with like my honesty and how like vulnerable I had been, that they actually gave me my yearly bonus early as like a, you know, just thank you for like being the way that, you know, for coming to us with this and taking, you know, just, yeah, I think just being honest, honestly, I think they really appreciated just being honest and not stringing them along. And that's what I said too. I said, I don't want to work here for 6 months and go apply for other jobs and literally be applying on the company's dollar. And I said stuff like that. And I said, I could be a shitty employee to you for the next 6 months, or I could take a break now, and leave on good terms with you. And that's what I would rather do. And so they ended up giving me my yearly bonus early. And so that helped lengthen my runway of time that I was afraid that I was not going to make a penny, which obviously I did. So
That's so amazing. You mentioned an interesting point about like how like different scenarios in our head, like how we build them up going in and telling them like you don't want to work there anymore. It's kind of like you're fighting against this imaginary like parental unit being like, no, I'm going to do this, let me do this. And then we're like, okay, cool, like you're totally not happy.
No, it happens all the time. You're so right that we like we decide the outcome of the situation or the conversation or the argument before it's even happened. You know, we like, know what the person's going to say. We know what's going to happen. We know how this is going to go. Like I have had so many arguments with people without them being in the room.
Oh my gosh.
Like, so many arguments.
Like so many. It's just there have been times where I'm like, Lo, they're not here. They're not here. They're not having this conversation with you. Like, pick up the phone, call them, and text them.
I know.
Like, something like
this is useless to just spin. So that was definitely one of those moments, and I think was a good teaching lesson for me of just, like, you know, be vulnerable, speak from the heart, and you know, people hear that. You know, they don't always hear the details. They don't always, like, right, really hear the plan, but they, like, but they absorb the feeling. They absorb that sentiment that they connect with that kind of vulnerability. And I think that was a really good teaching moment for me in my life to have that experience.
Yeah. I mean, in this day and age, like I read somewhere, everyone's BS-o-meter is just skyrocketed. And we're so like craving that vulnerability and people just being raw and transparent with things. So when we experience it, it's kind of like a breath of fresh air that comes in. Sometimes we don't even know what to do with it because we're like, well, wait, what?
Okay, cool. Yep. No, it is very, very true. So yeah, that was kind of, so that was when I took the jump. I still had no idea if Own Brewers was going to pay the rent, and that wasn't the intention. You know, I was like, I don't have any idea what I'm going to do. So I took some time off. I kept telling everyone I took a sabbatical. Like I just wanted some space. Right. So I babysat for a while and I dog walked and I did just ridiculous things to make money. And then in the process I started, I had some requests. I'd been helping different people out with like brands and websites. And then I had what I'd done for Own Brewers, and people would often ask me like, well, who did all the website and the branding for Own Brewers? And I was like, well, I did all of it. And they'd be like, well, do you ever do this for freelance? And I thought, I mean, I guess I could, like, why not? Like I'd been doing freelance projects for a long time for different people. And so, and I thought, well, let's actually make this into a legitimate business. I don't half-ass anything. I whole-ass everything. And so then when I decided that I was going to be a brand consultant, you know, I bought the domain. I've been down this rodeo before. I know how to start a business at this point, you know. So I like got the domain, made the logo, got the business cards printed. And then I started walking around calling myself a brand consultant. I didn't have a single client or, you know, really anything to show for it. But I was a brand consultant then. So I did that for a while and got some big clients right away and was doing a lot of work in the marketing and branding realm. And I kind of just decided to let Own Brewers become whatever it was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. I wasn't putting marketing dollars into it. I wasn't investing like a ton of effort into it. It was more like, okay, Own Brewers will just be this fun thing, but my real ticket to making money is going to be this brand consulting business. And then in true form, the more you just kind of leave something alone and just like let it naturally be what it wants to be, that's when Own Brewers really started to explode from there, I think. And so, yeah, so now I still do branding. I still do some freelance stuff on the side for a lot of people because I'm a very complex, dynamic individual. I don't think anyone has to be one trick ponies. Mm-hmm. And like, and that's one thing I always hated about the yoga industry is that like, I didn't want to be a full-time yoga teacher. Like I have so many other skills and assets and like, I love business and I love marketing and I couldn't be a natural saleswoman. Like even if I tried, like I can, you know, I'm the kind of girl that when you go to a party, people will be like, oh, you know, what's new lately? You know, like, have you tried the new toothbrush Quip? Like, have you tried that yet? And people will be like, are you getting paid for this? And I'm like, no, I'm just obsessed with this toothbrush. And like, so I'm the girl that always like is finding new products and like, you know, unintentionally selling my friends on why they need to change their lives. But so I think that that's such a big part of me. And I have so much to give in ways of like, connecting and collaborating and managing like events and things like that. And so I think that's what was so beautiful about Om Brewers is I didn't have to be a one trick pony. I didn't have to just show up and teach the yoga class and then like leave. Like it was marketing and it was events and it was collaborating. It was partnerships and logistics. And there was so much that just fulfilled kind of all sides of me. And so I really believe strongly in that and being really open to all the ways that you can make money and all of the ways that make your heart sing. And I still love helping people grow their brand, their personal brand, their business brand, whatever it is. So I still do a freelance. It's just kind of few and far between as I focus most of my energy on growing my own brand, which is Om Brewers. So
I think that's awesome. And that's an important point to highlight is everyone's multifaceted.
Yeah.
Like you don't need to be putting yourself in this box. And like so many people put people in a box where I'm just like, no, like they're different people. I was having a conversation with my grandmama the other day and I go, well, I'm a multifaceted human. And if this, we're talking about a guy nonetheless. And I go, if this guy can't handle all multifacets of me, then bye.
Yeah.
And she just laughed. And I'm like, but I can, like, it's part of who I am. Like you doing the quirkiness at the party, yep, selling a toothbrush. That was me in college where you get alcohol and have liquid courage. And I go up to this random person and be like, hey, you took this class in sophomore year, mind you, this would be senior year. And they looked at me and I'm like, oh, because I took that class. And I was in the back. So I just remember you. So it was really, really awkward and weird. But I mean,
yeah,
had some great conversations come from it. But it's just interesting.
I think it's like so important to like let people kind of pursue things that they're curious about. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, right now I've been having a really big, so I talked about how I was really into Broadway, like as a kid and like mm-hmm. musical theater and things like that. Like I've been really feeling driven to bring singing back into my life lately. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that I'm going to go like leave all of this behind and try to go be on Broadway again. But now I'm kind of toying with like, I kind of want to learn how to like write music and like, mm-hmm. I kind of want to write lyrics and I kind of want to like perform some songs for some people. And like, I don't know, maybe I want to like release my own album today, not because I want to be the next, you know, Katy Perry, but right. maybe because like, I just like it. And so I've been really trying to not box myself into like, mm-hmm. I have to do this to make money. And this is the only thing I can do then.
Right.
I want to do lots of different activities. And I think that just pursuing things that kind of have that, we all know that like tinge, that like feeling you get in your heart of like, mm-hmm. ooh, like that buzzy feeling. And I think chasing those buzzy feelings everywhere and anywhere is so important.
Yeah, the buzzy. I call, for me, it feels like expansive, like it can breathe, like whatever it may be, like outlandish idea. I'm like, oh, that would be fun to do. Like totally. Me getting into public speaking and doing that. And I'm like, well, I want to train my voice and like work with a vocal coach and stuff like that. But I'm like, I don't want to work with a traditional one. I actually want to work with a vocal coach for singing because I know yeah. I can sing and it would be fun. It'd
yep.
be dual purpose and it would yeah. be fun. So I don't, people look at me weird that way. And I'm like, no, it would be fun. I'm going to have to do this anyway, or I want to do this anyway to preserve my vocal cords. So therefore,
yeah.
like, I'm going to go yeah. sing.
Yeah, I have a photo shoot scheduled on Friday this week. And I've been thinking about it and like how, okay, well, I need new brand photos here. I need this or that, or I should wear this Om Brewers tank top or whatever. And I'm like thinking about throwing all that away and just like going and being a model. Like I kind of want to like wear crazy makeup. I want to bring crazy outfits. And so I'm thinking about like going haywire, like not that I'm going to quit my life to be a model. Like that's right. not going to happen. But I'm like, well, I would just like some fun photos for me. I want to have some fun. I like making art. I like creating mm-hmm. art. And so I kind of wanted to, because even the photographer is like, okay, what do you want to do in your session on Friday? And I, you know, what's the intent, you know, what event are you going to be using this to promote? And I'm like, maybe I don't want to do any of that. Maybe I just want to literally go in and like create something really cool looking. So I've been like looking on Pinterest for like interesting portraits because I don't know, maybe no one will ever see these, but like I want to. And then on top of it, I get to help him pursue his passion mm-hmm. because he's a photographer and like he has this studio and he probably wants to like create things too. And so it's just like, the more that we allow ourselves to like relentlessly and fearlessly just like pursue things that make us happy, not because there's a paycheck waiting on the mm-hmm. other end of it, I think the more room it gives for other people to express and create. And I think that that expression is what is absolutely vital to happiness.
100%. It's like I always say, you're not here just to pay bills.
Yeah, exactly.
You're here to pay bills something.
And lose weight. Nobody wants that.
Pay bills and lose weight. I love that because it's so true. Thank you, media.
Yeah, I know, right? So I'm just kind of on this new resurgence of like, I just want to do things because they're fun. And I mean, that's kind of like, that's why Own Brewers exists, because I just wanted to have a good time. But I think that's also why it took me a little while maybe to take the business seriously, because I had this idea that I can't, who the fuck do I think I am to, that I could make a living off of having fun? Mm. Like, that can't be possible. Like, I've fought it for so long, just being like, I'm not allowed to do this. I'm not allowed to run a yoga and drinking business, like, and have a good time doing it. And that would be my life. And that's how I would support myself. Like, I'm not allowed to do that. Like, are you kidding me? And so for a long time, I just couldn't, you know, I wasn't able to reconcile that I could have fun and like my life and get paid to do it. And I think that is definitely an interesting recipe, a crucial piece of the puzzle that is missing for a lot of people my age still.
Yeah, 100%. Because a lot of people our age grew up with, like, you work and then you go home, you do the traditional thing, but your work isn't supposed to be like fun. Yet they tell you should go do something that makes you happy, that whatever. But when you get into a job that you hate, then it's like, oh shit, how are you going to be able to pay your bills? Like, what are you going to be able to do? Like, why? Or why would you have the audacity to get off the conveyor belt line and trailblaze your own way?
Yeah. Well, especially because you're like, I don't get to be special. You know, I don't get to be like one of these special ones that actually like gets to like their life. Like, how sad is that?
That is so interesting. Like, you're not, yeah, like some reason, like having a happy life is for other people, but not for yourself.
Yeah, totally. And I think the same goes with like creativity and creative living. You know, people are like, well, I'm not creative. Like, you know, creativity and living interestingly is for other people. Like, that would never be possible for me. But I think it's because we're also afraid to get creative in general. Because it's like, well, if I can't do this and make money, then there's no point. And so we just don't try anything new. And we deem activities that don't directly lead to a paycheck a waste of time. And it's a shame.
It is. Yeah, 100% is. I mean, I remember even in my own journey, I caught in that too. I'm like, oh, I can't be doing this. It's not going to be making me money. But I was miserable.
Yeah.
Like throwing paint on a canvas just for fun.
Yeah.
No one's going to see it. I'll probably put a quote on it and put it in my room and call it good, or somewhere in my house. But
like, the other day I just like spray painted something and it felt good. I was like, yeah, creating. Like, and I just spray painted something and like, that was a blast. So, and I have this like cool succulent thing that I have that I made.
Yeah. Which is really awesome. I want to go back to that point about like people afraid to get creative. I think it's more they're afraid to like get risky and messy, because creativity is risky and messy. You don't know. It's not math. It's not 2 + 2 = 4. Like,
yeah,
there's
and it is subjective. And right. I guarantee there will be someone that hates what you're doing.
Right.
So that, but yeah, it's like, what do you do when that person inevitably comes that is not a fan of what you're doing? And you know, is that the voice you're going to listen to? I think it's Elizabeth Gilbert that talks about fear, being like a passenger in your car. Mm-hmm. I think it's in Big Magic. She talks about this. And I always return to this like sentiment where like the fear is allowed to be there. You are allowed to come on the ride. You are allowed to give your opinions, but you're not allowed to drive. Like, the fear is not allowed to drive my decisions. Like, it can be there and it can hang out and it can watch and it can like weigh in, but it does not get to drive. And exactly. I always return to that when I find myself like stalled by a decision or pulling the plug on something.
Right. I love that book so much. I go back to the shit sandwich where she was having a conversation about a guy who's like, are you willing to eat like the shit or the crappy part of a job to have this like nice nugget that everyone wants the reward? So like, if you're an attorney, like being in the courtroom, are you willing to actually have 90% of your work be on paper behind a screen and never really go to the courtroom? And it's kind of like, nope. And so it goes back to anything, like, you see both sides. Like, am I really willing to eat the crappiness just to get to that fun, what I want to do?
Yep, 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I love that book so much. What has been?
I don't think I finished it now that I think about it. I think it's, like, sitting upstairs somewhere. I think I tend to read, like, 10 books at once. Mm-hmm. And like two of them are usually on audio and like three of them are physical ones. And I like, depending on what I need, cause every now and then, and that's the thing I think with like, self-help books or inspirational books or, you know, whatever it may be, I can only handle them in so many doses. Cause sometimes my brain is so on overload that like I'll read things that are like so positive and so wonderful. But if I'm not in the right frame of mind to absorb it, I like feel bad about myself. Mm-hmm. And so I've gotten like that with a couple of books. Like I know I have to be like in the right mindset to read it, because otherwise I'll just interpret it as like, God, I just suck at everything. Like, you know, whose books do that for me? Rachel Hollis. I know that your listeners are going to want to burn me on a stake. But I don't know what it is. Like every time I pick up a Rachel Hollis book, I like feel bad about myself and I don't know why. And so I just have never been so, I have to read all her books in like short nuggets because I tend to like go to comparison mode. And it's not just Rachel Hollis's books. I do that in, you know, a lot of books, but if I'm already on overload and I'm not in the right place to kind of absorb this like advice or kind of this right kind of pushing or maybe their particular brand of motivational speak, I got to be in the right mindset for it. And that's why Big Magic has been hard for me to get through, is because it gets in there like magnifying glass right into your chest. Like, are you fucking living the way you want to live? And every now and then I'm like, oh my God, I don't know. Where am I? Like, so.
No, that's another great point to put. Like, not everyone says or does or out there is like you resonate with.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Like, you don't have to always be mainstream.
You got to find the brands like that work for you and the things that like actually inspire you and the different people and, you know, and given, you know, Instagram and that anyone's an influencer nowadays and anyone can release a podcast and anyone can write a book. Like there are other people that you will resonate with. So yeah, if that person isn't your cup of tea, literally just Google hashtags like motivational mindset and there's 12,000 other people you could follow.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, I've suggested some to friends and they're like, oh, we don't really like this person. I'm like, okay, cool. That's fine. Yeah. It just came up a moment and I was like, here's a resource. Try if you don't like it. Cool. No skin on my back.
I had this other day with a friend too, actually. She, we had read Elaine Welteroth's More Than Enough. Have you read that yet?
I have not.
Get on it. It's great. It's amazing. So I told all my friends about this book, More Than Enough. I was like, you got to read it. It's so good. And then one of my friends was like, I do not like this book. Like, it's just really, really race heavy. Mm-hmm. And she said that, and she works in crime. Like, she works for the police department. And so she said that she, like, I think it's hard for her to, like, go to work and like have to deal with that kind of stuff every single day and then read a book that was kind of about it. But that was just her perception, because I didn't interpret that at all about the book. I was like, this book is 100% to me about like women fighting for equality and like being like realizing that like we are only hold ourselves back as much as we'll let ourselves hold ourselves back. And if we just like be the best for, I was like, it's just about like feminine power. And she was like, oh, that's not what I got from this book. This book is like about, you know, the plight of the modern Black woman. And I can't relate to that because I'm not a modern Black woman. And I was like, I don't think it's about that, but that's like 100% what she thought it was about. And I was like, yeah, I just think it is crazy how we all absorb things like so differently.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. What has been like one of the biggest lessons you've learned since creating Own Brewers?
Oh God, I've learned so many lessons with it, which is like the most generic. I can think of podcasts that I've heard where the girl says exactly what I just said to you. Oh God, so many lessons. I'm gonna have to think about that one. I think I learn a different lesson every day. So it's hard to really pinpoint like the biggest lesson. Cause the second you learn something, you graduate, you get a little bit bigger, you get a little bit more expansive. Like your capacity to take risks grows a little bit more every single day. So I don't think I've necessarily learned like one or two like really big lessons, but I have continually been learning the lessons that I have need to grow into bigger shoes that I want to wear. And so I guess where I'm at kind of right now is the biggest lesson that I'm learning is to let go of control, I think. And to just let time be on my side, that I don't have to have all this figured out right now, and that I don't have to have the answers for all of this, and that I just have to keep trusting like the process. I think that's kind of something that I'm really learning right now with a business, especially one where you are looking to it to make money and fund you, like to pay your bills. You're always looking for like that threshold kind of like, okay, I want to reach this plateau and then I want to be comfortable. And I'm starting to understand that my journey with Ohm Brewers, there may never be a plateau. There may never be that point, and so I should just stop looking for it. I should stop searching for this plateau where all of the magic fairy dust comes together, time and space and opportunities, and boom, success. I have really been trying to realize that the journey is what I signed up for, and the journey is what gives me so much life. And so if I'm not chasing some imaginary location, which is AKA success, then I got no timeline. Then I can't really like make a wrong turn, because it's just being on the path at all, is what's the most exciting to me.
Yeah.
So that's been the lesson that I've been trying to learn and relearn every day over here.
100%. I think that's an important lesson a lot of people learn or like go through. I equate it to like if you're wanting to forgive someone. Some people, I always just wake up every day and say, I wish to forgive, or I forgive this person. Even on the days where you're just like, no, I do not. And I'm just like, it's just the act of doing it, saying you're having this willingness, that will get you there. And one day you'll eventually reach it. I don't know when that day will be, but it's just getting you on the journey so that way that you can move on with your life.
Yeah. There's a really cool, I think this was a podcast I listened to. I don't remember. Normally I'm good at attributing none of my geniuses for me. They're all from other people. I wish I could remember it, but I can't. But this speaker on whatever podcast I was listening to talked about negative emotions. Like your brain is like a highway. Mm-hmm. And you create these highways from time and circumstance and things that have happened to you, and your neurons, like quite literally scientifically, your brain makes neural highways. Mm-hmm. So the first time something happens to you, like let's say when you're like a kid, you ask for something and you get told no and you feel stupid. That's like kind of the first brick gets laid. Mm-hmm. And then over time, you start to fall back on these patterns. And it's no different than like, you don't need to look at Waze anymore to drive to your home. You know exactly where you're going. And so these highways just get kind of cemented into your brain, and yeah, the bricks get laid, and like the grout gets poured, and soon you're repaving to make it even more sturdy. And so it works that way even with like negative emotions and trauma. And so then when you want to actively change something about your thought pattern or a process, the way that you are, you have to literally build a brand new dirt road. And it takes so much time to establish a new highway, and you're like, well, I'm lost and I don't know where I'm going. And it's really, really easy to just be like, I'm gonna hop back on the 35 because I know the way home. I know the way to like negative self-talk, and I know the way to like misery and all that stuff, because that's the highway that I've built my whole life. But to go on a dirt road that your brain has never gone down before is really scary, and it does take a lot of time. And this analogy has always been really, really powerful for me when I've tried to maybe grow, or I think the most I can equate it to is like the journey that I took, like for self-love, and like thinking that I was like beautiful or that I had an amazing body or that I was a wonderful person or whatever. I mean, I did not always feel that way. I still sometimes don't. I'm a woman. Hello. Like, welcome to being a woman. I made a goal that every morning I was going to get up and I was going to look at myself in the mirror. And I said out loud, like, you are beautiful. Like, I am beautiful. And every time, and then I kind of made it a goal from there that anytime I saw a reflection of myself, I was going to mentally say, you are beautiful. Like, look at how beautiful you are. And it wasn't the first thought. Like, there would be times where I would like, look, I would catch my reflection. I would look in the mirror, whatever. And I would immediately want to say something negative. Like, God, your hair looks like crap today, whatever. And then I'd be like, no, even if I don't believe it, even if I think this is horseshit, I'm going to look at myself in the mirror and be like, you look incredible. And that was my way of laying down the dirt road. That the other negative highway like also exists. And sometimes I hop back on it, but I'm still, you know, building up the other one. And now it's not so much a dirt road. It's like a county. It's like a county highway. But soon it's going to be, you know, the 494 interchange. So,
right. But those things like take time. I mean, how many years have you had like that building and creating that highway of the negative, I'll just call it the negative Nancy highway. And now you're building the highway that you actually want, the way you want to be thinking.
Totally.
You know, that taking time is sometimes challenging for people who are like doers like us. Like, what? Yep. Patience? That's the thing? Yep. Nope. I mean, Christ, you went out New Year's, got an idea, and that night you.
I know, and that night, I know it's true. I am such a like an instant kind of girl. Like, I love to do right away, as soon as humanly possible. Now, all the time.
So before we get into the final questions, I have one question for you. What would piece of advice or encouragement would you give someone who's thinking about taking that leap on their happiness, whether it is, you know, leaving a job, starting a company, or maybe it's leaving a job to start a whole different career, whatever that looks like?
Ooh, advice. I think one, you don't have to do it alone, like thinking that you have to have all the answers. Like, there are so many other people that are specialized in certain areas and that do have the answers, and just asking them. I think building up your support network is so important. Like, you're not meant to do everything. Like, you can do anything, but you shouldn't do everything. And so having people that are experts in areas where you are not is so important. And just being like, okay, this is not, like, I remember very early on, like, I got a lawyer and I got an accountant because I was like, I don't know anything about that. And guess what? I don't want to spend my time learning how to do what a lawyer already knows how to do. And so I said, I would just rather pay the money to an expert and let her, you know, do my LLC statement and stuff like that, rather than me literally read all these documents online, have to figure out how to do all this. I was just like, my time where I shine as a human is connecting with other people and doing the accounting and doing the, like, figuring out the legal stuff and doing like insurance things. That's not where I shine. That is not a good use of my time. And so really building up a team where there are people that excel where you are weak. I do not think that we are meant to take weaknesses and turn them into strengths. I think you should just focus on your strengths and find other people that have the strengths where you are weak. So that being said, everyone should take a Gallup Strengths Insight Finder test probably. So step one, figure out what your strengths are. And then surround yourself with people that do not have those strengths, because you will grow that much faster. That, and then also abundance mindset, I think, is huge. Collaboration over competition. I say that phrase 10,000 times a day. Whenever I like see something online or I get like testy about something, I'm like, oh my God, they're doing that. Like, I did that first. Or like, wait, oh my God, they're doing that. I want to do that too. Collaboration over competition. There is enough money. There are enough people. There is enough time to go around for all of us. And when you come at things from a lack mindset, from a lacking, from a scarcity mindset, you will never, ever find what you need or be enough. But the more that you can practice abundance and inclusivity, that there is enough to go around, and that there is a place for everyone's strengths, the faster you will grow.
Oh my gosh. So many good nuggets. Like, yeah, you've just like so many, it's like popcorn. I'm like, can I get a list to write these down? But that's just so true. Melissa's nuggets. But that's so true about, like, you know your strengths, and then like at the people around you who are strengths in your weakest areas. That's, yep. I mean, saves time. It's more efficient. Like, I think
completely.
I think it was in Thinking Grow Rich or How Rich People Think, whatever Napoleon Hill book that is. He had Henry Ford in there, an example where Henry Ford was basically being on trial for being an imposter because people didn't like that he became the successful, and they asked him a question, just like random general facts about different things. And his response was, well, why would I go look up that facts when I can push a button or make a phone call and call one of my experts and they can tell me what that is? Like, it saves so much time and money. Like, isn't that efficient enough?
Yeah, isn't that the point of efficiency?
Yes. All right. So for our final questions, what is a book, a podcast, resource that has been supportive on your journey that the audience should know about?
Ooh, let's see. So I really love books on Audible. Mm-hmm. So my big one, I listen to You Are a Badass on Audible. Mm-hmm. I read You Are a Badass and I only made it through the first 20 pages. Again, you know how some people's type of motivation just doesn't work for you? I hated it. I was like, why are you yelling at me? Why are you telling me I'm a bad person? Like, I don't know what it was about it. Reading it did nothing for me. But listening to it changed my, I mean, it's the reason I quit my job is that book. But yeah, I had to listen to it on Audible. So I'd say You Are a Badass, Jen Sincero, is phenomenal. Again, I recommend listening to it over reading it. Another book that was really, that I listened to on Audible, that was actually very, very defining for my life, it's called Pussy, A Reclamation. Mm-hmm. And it's by Regina Thompson Hoyer, I believe is her name. And it's just about, I mean, it's what it sounds like. It's about reclaiming the word pussy. Mm-hmm. I guess when I say pussy or reclamation, you're like, I have no idea what that sounds like, Melissa. So I should give a few more details. But it's about reclaiming the word pussy, but then also about just reclaiming femininity, mm-hmm. and how, like, we are feminine creatures, and the more we can play into that strength instead of trying to suppress it, the better off you will be. And that book changed my life, my business, my relationships, like everything, because we are not like siloed beings, you know, where it's like, oh, like just this part of me is business, and then this part of me is like sexual, and then this part of me is yogi, and this part of me, like, I am a whole being. It is all connected. And I think that book was a really powerful tool where I started to really get connected with who I am as a feminine creature, and like an energy source, and a human of worth and value. And it was a big game changer for me. I can't recommend that book enough.
I've had a few friends read that book too and suggest it to me, so I know what you're talking about.
I think it's very, very powerful. Very, very powerful. So I love that. And then some other podcasts that I'm listening to right now. God, I need to make a list of these. You're so right. Right now I'm on the train. Yoga Is Dead. That's been a new one. It's really, really good. Like the first episode is called Why White Women Killed Yoga.
Oh my gosh.
I love it so much. It just shares a lot of my philosophies about what I think is kind of broken in the yoga industry, and kind of has strengthened my resolve for what I'm trying to do at Om Brewers, and really changing what yoga is and what people think yoga should be, or what kind of yogi I should be, you know, quote unquote, like fuck all that. So Yoga Is Dead is a great, great resource. I'm also listening to What was I just listening to the other day? Yeah, I think those are the big ones. But yeah, I do lots of books on audio, lots of books on audio, probably more so than podcasts.
Yeah. So where can everyone find you on social media and all of that?
Ombrewers, like it sounds, OMBREWERS. That is my Instagram. That is the Facebook / that is the website, ombrewers.com. And my email, anyone on earth could guess it. It's melissa@ombrewers.com. And if you don't know how to spell Melissa, you can do info@ombrewers.com. And I am an open book and I will talk to anyone all day, every day. And, you know, 90% of my job sometimes feels like it's being on social media. And I'm not someone that would like, I don't hate all over social media. It's brought me a lot of really, really cool people and amazing opportunities. So I'm on it a lot. If you DM me, I will see it and I will respond. So.
Awesome. So the final questions, what do you believe has been your bravest moment?
Bravest moment, I think, was quitting my job without a game plan. I definitely was very, very afraid and very convinced that it would be a matter of months before I was like applying to be back at some corporate gig. So I think that was probably one of the bravest things I've ever done. Was leaving my job. And then ever since then, it's just been little brave nuggets from there, different opportunities, different things that have really tested my courage and tested my strength. So I feel like I'm continually being brave by staying on the path.
Awesome. And the final question, what is your definition of brave?
I think being brave means not being afraid to look at the messy parts of yourself and the messy parts of your life and following your intuition when you get that gut check that tells you something is off here. I think being brave is acknowledging that and listening to that without an explanation. I think we always think we need to justify our choices. And the older that I get, the more I'm realizing I don't really have time to justify to people why I am the way I am or why they should like me or why they should love Ohm Brewers or why they should do it. Like, I don't have time to convince people. Like, that is not my mission. Like, I was not put here to convince and sway people. I am here to just shine as bright as I want, as often as I want, as big as I want. And I don't owe anyone an explanation for that, nor does anyone owe me an explanation for why they want what they want. And I think that is being brave.
Oh my gosh. I love it. Well, Melissa, thank you so much for coming on today. Like, so many nuggets of wisdom here. And I loved how we went all over the place and just sharing your story. And, you know, I do love the fact that it was a drunken New Year's Eve night. And
I know all my best food is come from drinking, I'm telling you. But yeah, this was really, really great. It's always very heartwarming when you get to kind of take a step back and retell your story and why you're here. And it feels good for me too. So.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Built Brave. If you love this episode, heck, if you like this episode, please head on over, give it a rate, review, subscribe, like, shout it out on your social media with your major takeaways and what you loved about the episode. And as always, tag me in that at Low Wentworth, because I love hearing what you guys got out of the episodes. And until next time, remember, you've always been brave.